Will you please pray with me? O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ, Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. And wrote a note, so I thought I would read it to you. Hari Om, O beloved Guru. This is day 4 here at the ashram, and the most fun day so far. I say this because the whole day was dedicated to chanting Ram Nam in honor of yourself and dear friends who are here in their hearts but could not be here in person. Isn't that wonderful how she thinks of all of us? Mm-hmm. She's chanting Ram Nam. Each 30-minute round, I concentrated on one beloved friend, visualized them walking around the mandir with me, all full of bliss in the moment. My chanting was aimed to reach them across the globe, offered as a prayer for complete fulfillment of the mantra for all, victory, victory to thee. Today I will dedicate the chanting for all 12 Ram Nam sessions on behalf of John. On the same day I arrived, a tour group of 36 people from Argentina came. It has been so inspiring to see them from the very first day when they came. Knowing nothing of this place, curious but a little reserved, by the end of the second day, they were losing themselves in Ram Nam, chanting as if they had loved it all their lives. Most of the group only speaks Spanish, so Swami Muktananda held a special satsang, which was translated into Spanish, and they ask many sincere questions. They have even, as a group, requested to extend their stay here. It's wonderful to imagine that those seeds of Ram Nam having been planted in their hearts and those seeds taking root when they return home. Papa's blessings for full awakening to God in their hearts. In addition to those friends named before in my last email who send their love, a hearty namaskar goes out to you from Vinay. Also, greetings from Ram Dass and Krishnabai, Shyam's parents, and Ranjani from Delhi. She is so proud that you went to her house, and she says you liked her tea and her cooking very much. Ever in your light, you're very honored, Rebecca. Isn't that lovely? Speaking of Ram Dass and Krishnabai, they're the parents of Shyam. Shyam was in the wheelchair and had a nerve disorder that gradually took his life. And the last time that I was there, they were so distraught still. It had been over a year since their son, I believe he is in his mid-30s by that time. Many of us got to know him and Ram Dass and Krishnabai would invite us down to their house, and she really was a spectacular cook. If you ever get a chance, be sure to go to their house, and she'll make chapatis for you and all kinds of delicious meals there. But they're so dedicated to the ashram and have been all of their lives, and Ram Dass comes up and he leads in Ram Nam at different times, and this place has so many souls that are terrific. Really terrific. Many, many saints there. Such purity of mind. But they couldn't understand why they were missing their son so much, and of course they would. And he was a fixture in their lives, and their lives really, as parents, rotated around him because of his needs. He had to be lifted out of the bed. We took the opportunity 1 year, collected funds from people, and we bought a new chair for him because the old one didn't fit him correctly. And it was very heavy to move around, so we were able to order one from New York. There is an ashram devotee there in New York who helped arrange it and get it shipped over to Sham. And Sham means, it's a name for Krishna. Means the dark clouded one. And he's beautiful, beautiful soul. He had a big round face and a beautiful smile and was always so cheerful despite his physical conditions. Always cheerful, always positive, always very loving. So we think of him and his family very, very fondly. Reading from Papa, from God Experience. And Papa's talking about bhakti. Bhakti is love of God. And it is both your love for God, but also, and perhaps more importantly, the love that God puts into your heart. God, who is said to be love itself, and it is true, the very author of love. And we can love, but usually our love is predicated upon, if you do what I want you to do, then I love you. And if you don't do what I want you to do, then I don't love you. But divine love takes us beyond that. It takes us into a state where love is absolute. And it's not just a thought. It's not just some words that you say. It is a powerful feeling that comes into your heart. It transcends any other love. Now, anyone who has ever fallen in love before, they know how powerful that can be. But this is even more than that. I'll tell you about a time when I was very much intensely desiring to know how to love God. I didn't feel like I had any love for myself or anyone else for that matter. I didn't understand it, but I wanted to know about this. Mother talked about it often, loving God. What does that mean exactly? And so I was led to read two different books. One was about St. Francis, a great lover of God, and the other is Sri Ramakrishna, also another great lover of God. And this began to awaken something in me, but it wasn't pleasant. It felt like my heart was just in such great pain. Now, the heart center, spiritually speaking, is right in the center of your chest. It's not over to the left as the physical heart is. And this is a center that is in your more subtle astral body. And so that center is right there, square in your chest. And I just felt such terrific pain, and it was growing day by day. I was living in Bellingham at the time and going to Western University. And as was my wont, I lived near Seaholm Hill, and so I would walk up there at nighttime. And I had this one particular rock. It was a very huge rock that sat out. And I could look over the town. I've been back since, and the trees have grown around, and it's not the same. But I just felt drawn to this rock, and I would sit there and meditate, and I'd start out. I could look out over the city and see the lights, and it was beautiful. Then my eyes would close. And one night, I was so powerfully drawn in. And as I was there, I saw Jesus within my inner eye. So beautiful, so beautiful. And he said, "Do you not know that I am the bridegroom, you are the bride?" Now it seems strange, perhaps, to call me the bride since I have this male body. But in that sense, in the metaphysical sense, the Christ consciousness is the only male of the universe, and all souls are the female. And the soul rises up. This is also told in the story of Krishna and the gopis. And the Krishna stands in the middle of the night and he plays his flute. He plays the sound, the music of God. And the gopis are drawn out to him. And so I had this tremendous vision of Jesus and he is saying these words to me. And it was thrilling. It was inspiring. It was such a real experience to me, so vivid and so real. The next night, I went back up for my meditation, and I was sitting there, and my heart hurt so badly, I thought it was going to break in two. It was so painful. And finally, there was, as if there was a snap. And with that snap, the heart center broke open. And I felt this tremendous love. I had never felt it before in this lifetime. This tremendous love started flowing out of my heart. I felt like I was in an ocean of love. The air itself around me was all filled with the life of this love. So it was as if I was swimming in an ocean of love, and yet it was pouring through my heart at the same time. A tremendous experience. And it's probably a good thing that it was nighttime and I was in an isolated place, because I started acting like a madman. I was down on the ground, kind of swimming in the ground, because I just felt this ecstatic love and swimming in this ocean of love. And then I was touching the limbs and kissing them of the trees around me, because I just felt this overwhelming love, and everything around me was resonating with that. It was a tremendous experience, and it was the first time that this heart center had opened up in this way. And it was the beginning of something new, a new life. Now, I didn't always feel it. It began to subside somewhat, fortunately, probably, but so that I could operate more normally. But after that, I felt this love flowing through my heart. So this is the love of God. It is God's love that flows through you, and it is beyond your own likes and dislikes. You meet somebody, do you like them, the looks of them or not? Do they behave well towards you or not? It has nothing to do with any of that. That love flows through you, no matter what's going on in your own mind. And because it goes higher than that, beyond that, it's purer than that. It's purer than any human love could ever be. So this is a tremendous state to come into. And this is what Papa is talking about here, this bhakti, this love. The question as to whether one should have any preparation necessary for becoming fit for His grace. If God says that you must do sadhana to receive grace, it means you are like a laborer earning his wages. There is no question of one earning here. His grace alone must purify you. Pray to Him, cry out to Him. Then He will come. He will not say, you have not done sadhana. You have not yet purified yourself. So I talk to so many people and they feel like, well, I've made so many mistakes in my life. And I haven't lived the life that I know that I should have. Therefore, I have no right to approach God. But this is the ego speaking. This is not what God wants for you. God is the purifying force within you. And He will make you fit. He will make you fit in order to receive His grace. Papa goes on here. The story goes, a humble servant living in a small hut with his family once went to the king and prayed to him to visit his humble cottage. The king agreed. But the cottage was very small. It was not clean, and it was in no way fit for the king's reception. The king ordered his minister to get the house thoroughly cleaned, properly equipped, and decorated. After getting everything ready, the king paid his visit. So you invite God to reveal Himself in your heart. He makes it pure, and then He reveals Himself. All that you have to do is to call Him, just as a child calls a mother. You must entirely forget everything else when you call Him. Many ardent devotees have, in this way, got the darshan of God, or the vision of God. The only thing needed is to cry to God to come and save you, i.e., to absorb you into His being. Then a devotee asked, please describe the love of gopis and other great devotees. Papa, the very thought of Krishna made the gopis forget everything, and they were immersed in His bliss. Krishna's bluish figure and everything that He did filled their hearts. Whenever they saw the blue sky, they would go into trance or ecstasy. When they saw the forest, his remembrance would fill them with his bliss. It is rare, pure, glorious love for the that the gopis gave to Krishna, the idol of their hearts. The gopis were suffering the pangs of separation after Krishna went to Mathura. Uddhava went to console them and talk to them of jnana. Krishna is not merely the form, he is the eternal truth. You need not feel separation from him. He is always with you. He pervades you everywhere. You can be aware of his presence everywhere and enjoy bliss and peace. On hearing this, Radha said, "You have told us all of these things, but our hearts are so full of Krishna that your ideas cannot enter there. We are so fond of the figure of Krishna that your jnana does not at all appeal to us. You may take the jnana with you. We want our Krishna. What love it is. In the presence of that love, jnana, cities, that is, powers, and the like, fade into insignificance. Thousands of Kabirs are floating in the ocean of one gopi's love," said Kabir. "Saints and sages of all ages praise the unique devotion of the gopis so much." So as Papa says here, we cannot earn this love. It comes as a gift. And yet we must prepare ourselves. We must do our part, do what we can do. We call to God. We ask him. And you don't have to pretend anything before you have realized it, before you know it. This is a path of realization. It is a path of experience. It is not a path just simply of faith. There are many others who say, well, just have faith in this, and in the end, perhaps when you die, you'll get everything revealed, then you'll know all the secrets. But really, this is not the truth. The truth is that that great revelation, that great light of God exists in you already, and it is ready to come forward. You are like a ripe seed that is ready to burst its bounds and start to send out shoots out toward the light so that you might realize these great truths. I had really two criteria. I didn't formulate it at the time, but I know that it's true. It's the things that I really yearned for when I thought of God and reaching God awareness. First of all, I wanted bliss because I felt in such pain at the time. It was a spiritual crisis, and I felt this pain of separation very keenly. And it would never left me. So number one, I wanted to know God's bliss and to remove this pain that I was feeling so greatly. The second thing I really demanded was the truth. Because bliss without truth is incomplete, even as truth without bliss is also incomplete. Sat Chid Ananda is the name of God in India. Sat is the pure sense of being. Chid is consciousness, being aware, and Ananda is bliss. So it is knowing the truth of your own being, and it is being in this blissful presence. When you have that, then you have God. As Krishna or Sri Yukteswar said, you can have all the powers in the world, you can be able to perform miracles, and still not have God. And yet, you may have God, and you may perform no miracles whatsoever. The two, in one sense, are unrelated. It is God consciousness that comes to you. It completes you. It makes you feel full and complete. This past week, marked the anniversary of Master's birthday, and I've been feeling him very, very close. So I thought I would read to you from this wonderful book. It's Treasures Against Time, and it's about Dr. and Mrs. Lewis, who were, it is said that Dr. Lewis was the first disciple of Yogananda's in America, and Dr. Lewis deferred to that, but wasn't excited about that kind of claim. But he met Master, and like many of us, he had a critical mind and just didn't want to go along with anything. But he had some questions, and somebody had recommended that he meet this Swami from India. Master had just recently arrived from India. And so he went to see him. A master had a small apartment in Boston where he was living at the time. And Dr. Lewis came in, and he sat down, and Dr. Lewis asked, he said, "Now, there's a saying from Jesus that let thine eye be single, and thy whole body shall be filled with light. I want to know, what is the truth around that? I don't understand it, and I've never met anybody who can really explain it to me. Can you show me this light?" And Master said, "Yes, I think so." And so he had Dr. Lewis sit down on the ground. Well, you have to understand that this is the early 1920s, that in Boston, people were more formal. Dr. Lewis always wore a hat. He always wore a vest and a coat. So sitting down on the floor wasn't a normal thing, but he agreed to it, and so he sat. He said, "Don't imagine that I sat down in a full lotus position, nothing of the sort, just sat cross-legged, what we call Indian style." And he sat there, and Master sat across from him. And Master leaned forward, and he touched his forehead against Dr. Lewis's. And he saw there a brilliant light here at this point between the eyebrows, right in the forehead there. And he was amazed at that. And so Master leaned back again, and they talked for a while more. And then Master leaned forward again and touched his forehead like that, forehead to forehead. And he saw an amazing thing. He saw his entire brain lit up in this light. And the brain appeared to be like a full lotus bloom, all these petals, and they are all radiating light. And he could look down into the brain itself, and he could see where the nerves and where the blood vessels interacted in the brain. But superimposed upon this, he saw this beautiful lotus glowing there with all of this light. And he was amazed, and so this really began his journey towards God. And Master used to love to tell the story that it was Christmas Eve, and Dr. Lewis had just thought that he'd stop in for a few minutes, and then he would go on home, where the tradition was that he and Mrs. Lewis would put up the Christmas tree and decorate it. So it ran much, much later than what he thought it would be. So he's coming in very late at night. And Mrs. Lewis is standing there next to the door. Apparently she was quite upset because she is standing there with a rolling pin in her hand. What she intended to do with it, I'm not quite sure. But at the moment she saw him, she just dropped the rolling pin because he was just radiant with this light. And she saw it. So from that moment on, they pursued this path of Kriya Yoga and following after Master's teachings. And they were wonderful, wonderful people. And they put all the letters that Master wrote to them and many of the writings into this book called Treasures Against Time. So Master is traveling. This is 1924. Mother met Master in 1925. So this is the year before. And he made a trip around the United States. I don't know if it was this trip or not, but on one of them, Master, because he was a man of color, dark skin, there were some places where he could go where he couldn't get a hotel room. And this provided a problem, even though he was treated as a celebrity in many places that he went, still it proved to be a problem at times. And so he built perhaps one of the first motor homes where on the back of a pickup, he built this living space where he and his secretary and those who traveled with him could all travel together across America and not have to worry about where they are going to stay that night. Master tells a funny story about that they were staying in this motor home, but apparently it didn't have any heat in it. And he and his secretary were sharing a blanket. And as they slept, it was quite cold out. And so one of them would grab the blanket and pull it towards them and uncover the other one. And then the other one would grab the edge of the blanket and pull it back and back and forth. And I'm like, that's a little tug of war over the blanket for some time. The master finally sat up and he says, I've had it. He says, I'm not going to do this anymore. And he sat up in meditation and he says, I want to transcend all cold. And so he went into a deep state of meditation, and he went beyond heat and cold, and he felt there the bliss and the uplifting power of his Heavenly Father, and that's how he spent the rest of the night. So, wouldn't that be lovely to be able to travel with Master across the country like that? But this is dated June 24th, 1924. Dear Dr. and Mill, Mrs. Lewis's name, first name was Mildred, so he called her Mill. I cannot tell you how I enjoyed last time your beautiful, silent kindness towards me. Never a question arose in my heart ever since I met you both as to how you feel towards me. I know it, and even hereafter shall know it. I will never question it. After a long time, the tide with you seems so familiar, so natural, full of the most enjoyable sweetness. We can find better cars, better scenes, better automobiles, better rides, but not better joys, which we had together in that particular ride. It sometimes becomes very hard for me to rebuke Mildred, knowing what she feels within. I know, and you know, how dearly God has grown our friendship. With love to you both and the children, very sincerely, Swami Yogananda. P.S. All the time, feasting on nature's scenes and drinking her great nectar, every moment he is with me. Day and night slip by unnoticed. Be in God and Om. Now is the time. Master used to love to go on rides in the car and take a picnic lunch with them. And so they would go out and picnic and see the different scenery. This comes from the Hotel Anchorage in Anchorage, Alaska, September 18th, 1924. Dear Doc and Mill, reached here safely at last through the several hundred mile long garden of snow-capped green mountains laid on the barren sea. I came from Seward by train. I saw glaciers by sea and land. The scenery is almost equal to Kashmir. Alaskan beauty can rightfully compete with Kashmir mountains and Lotus Lakes. Wish you had all been here. I'm now carrying with me new beauties of God found in nature. Let only God consciousness reign between us. Let the everlasting spiritual tie be stronger than ever. It is never too late. If we try again and again, kindliness, devotion, loyalty to God in your path lives forever. Let the good always dazzle before your eyes. Let darkness go. Love harmony. Boston is dear to me and shall ever be, shall ever be, naughty or good, it might be. Boston needs satsanga more than ever. Let my dear memories in Boston thrive. Let my soul confidence in the goodness of you all grow. Let your hearts welcome the truth, and you will find me always there to help you. To help you more than you ever dreamed of. But doubt not when God tries you. Keep your abiding faith. And this one comes from Seattle, Washington. Dear Doc and Mill, reached at very last near to our destination. We crossed the continent. Most delightful trip. I will never go back to train. No matter what happiness in the work please do not forget any relation with you. I mean the divine one. Keep that unconditioned, untarnished. Life is short. Culture, harmony, devotion, loyalty to the path and your spiritual friend. You will find peace everlasting. Never lose faith. My good will and care will forever protect you. S. Yogananda. And note down at the bottom, over 5,000 miles we traveled over Pike's Peak in our car. Wish you both saw the wonderful place and were here. Very sincere. And then again from Seattle. Dear Dr. Emil, do you know that every morning at 7 o'clock, I send a spiritual message to you for the highest spiritual unfoldment and success in life? Do your own part. The spiritual seed given to you in the shape of lessons will bear fruits only if you moisten it daily and regularly with the water of patient practice. Protect your little growing spiritual plant from the insects of doubt and physical or mental idleness. You will be glad to know that I reached Seattle in September 3rd after an automobile trip of over 5,000 miles. On September 9th, I went to Anchorage, Alaska, to a wonderful 26-day trip. I lectured at Denver to 2,500 people in the city auditorium and had a large class. A Denver satsang is established. After my return from Celestial, Alaska, I lectured to more than 2,000 people in the Masonic Auditorium in Seattle. A Seattle satsang is in view. Your brothers and sisters are increasing. Don't forget, I am coming to you again in a new inspiration which our beautiful America has given me. Do not forget Christ sleeps in you, and the teachers of India are trying to help you. The world needs you, just as they need me. Spiritually prepare yourself for the regular practice of what I have taught you. In order to give you, you must possess. In order to give, you must possess. With blessings and prayers eternal, I remain sincerely yours, Swami Yogananda. We are all the beneficiaries of this great God-man. What did he bring to America that was unique? In some degree, it was the Eastern perspective and the words and things that go along with Eastern religion. But that wasn't the greatest thing. The greatest thing was that he brought to us this message that God resides within you, can be known, and can be realized within this lifetime, that you don't have to wait, that you don't have to go on just thinking, well, someday the truth will be revealed. He gave us the methods and the tools of meditation in order to realize these great truths. So these are the things that he brought and has changed the world. When Mother first met Master, she didn't know what the word yoga meant. She didn't know what the word Swami. She didn't know what a Swami was. None of it. And that was just the condition of the general culture. With few exceptions, people didn't know these things. Now, anytime you can see that the word karma is used, everybody has some general understanding of that. The word guru is used, and people also know that that means a teacher. It means one who brings light and dispels darkness. And so these are things that have penetrated into the very fabric of our culture. And Master is a large part of that. His great autobiography of a yogi is still a bestseller wherever it goes. So this is something wonderful, something beautiful. But it's not just something to do with India. Master would never want it that way. This is universal. Every human being has the same capacity. We just have to be taught the truth so that we might realize what resides inside of us. If you think about some mathematical principle that was developed before that time, there is no knowledge of it. And so it seemed like something that didn't even exist. And then suddenly somebody discovers this principle and that it has some applicability, some usefulness. Now everybody accepts it all the world over. Why? Because it has a universal application. In the same way, you think back on the time when people thought that the earth was flat. You think, well, there were sailors at the time, and the sailors would see that a ship that was approaching them from a great distance, first they would see the very top of the mast. Gradually, they would see more and more of the ship revealed as they grow closer. Now, why wouldn't you think that the earth is curved? How else do you explain that you only see the very top? It's not like you see the whole ship and gradually it gets bigger. You see more and more of it as it comes closer. If you're walking on land and you see mountains at a great distance, you can see the peaks. And then as you get closer and closer, more and more of the mountain comes into view. Not just larger, but more of the mountain. How can you explain this other than the Earth's surface is curved? And yet people didn't have that theory. They didn't have that idea, so they just discounted it. They didn't see it. In the same way, God reveals himself as expressing itself as all of this world, all of this universe, but we don't see it. We just go about in our lives and we live it in an ordinary way without suspecting that there's anything more. And then one day, perhaps through your spiritual practice and also grace comes into your life, it's like the scales fall off of your eyes. You're walking through the woods and you see the trees. And you know that there's sap flowing in these trees, and there's life from that. But your inner vision shows you that there is a life force that is moving within those trees. You see it. You feel it. It's a whole experience that you get. And suddenly you see it like you've never seen it before. And you know that there is this universal life force that is flowing in and around everything that there is. Not just because you've been told so, but because you actually have that experience. You also meet people then, and you see this tremendous life force flowing in and around them as well. You begin to open up. You enter into new experiences. Again, my mind is drawn back to those days when I was going to university in Bellingham. And I was walking across the campus, and I wasn't thinking about anything in particular. But suddenly God took me into an experience. God and the Guru's grace came into me, and it was as if all the barriers that existed around me, ones that I didn't even know that existed, they all just fell away. And I felt this tremendous connection, this tremendous love for all the people that I saw there. And I didn't know any of them personally. I was just walking across campus. And I just felt this connection, and when I looked on everyone's chest, I saw there the image of Mother. And it was the most tremendous experience. It was wonderful. And I hadn't even realized how many barriers that I had had that were all around me. I had mentioned before the opening up of my heart center, and that had all started before that when I was with Mother one time, and we were in a group. And she had this capacity, and I'd experienced it when she did it with others. And she would turn her full attention on them, and she would start to talk with them. And I would be sitting close by, and so I'd try to eavesdrop, being curious as to what they were talking. And no matter how logical it was in my mind, I should be able to hear her. Somehow I couldn't. I couldn't make out what she was saying. And this night was to be my night, because we were in a group, and suddenly it was as if there was this energy field that surrounded the two of us. And it felt like there was just the two of us, even though we were in this crowded room. And she looked at me and she said, "Why don't you love me completely?" Well, I had the first person that I'd fallen in love with, and then it hadn't worked out. And I felt such great pain around this. And I knew that I hadn't completely opened my heart before that. It had been several years of pain afterwards. And so I told her a little bit about that. And then she said, "Unless you love God completely, you cannot know him." well, my task was set before me, and suddenly this energy field that had been around us dissolved. All the noise and everything of the restaurant all of a sudden entered back in. And it was like a shell shock. It was like a bomb going off in the center of me. And I knew it was something that I had, it was a problem for me to solve. And so I wrestled with it. Well, what if I opened my heart again? And then it was all that pain all over again. Did I want to take that risk? And for a couple of weeks, I went back and forth with it. And I finally decided it doesn't make any difference what the risk is. I absolutely want to know God. And so I stepped out, so to speak. I made the decision that I wanted to know God, that I had to be able to love Him. And then it was later on that God took me through those experiences that I described before up on Seaholm Hill, and finally my heart center opened up. And this is what we must do. We must make a decision in our lives. Do we want to realize God? Do we want to know Him? And if the answer is yes, then we must be willing to do everything in our power in order to have that realization. Now, our power alone is not enough, and that's where grace comes in. The ego cannot transcend the ego. The mind cannot transcend the mind. Grace must come in. We are, in a human sense, imperfect, and we cannot perfect ourselves, and yet Jesus said, "Be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect." How is this possible? Because God's grace enters into you. And it perfects you, it purifies you. It is, as Papa described, the king who sent his minister to make the hut that this peasant had all clean, give it everything that was needed in order to prepare it for the visit of the king. God prepares you in all ways so that you are perfect, you are purified, so that your nervous system is strengthened, so that when this tremendous experience comes into you, you are able to hold it and you're not destroyed by it. So God knows when the right time is. Sometimes we pray and pray and pray, God, reveal yourself, reveal yourself. But we are not yet ready. We have not yet been made ready. And God is still working on us. And perhaps we're holding back still. We haven't given ourselves heart, mind, and soul, as of yet. And until that happens, as long as you hold on to anything for yourself. I was talking to one of the women that was there. She was just a girl at the time. And Mother Krishnabai had been getting on Papa and said, "You know, you have to give God realization to others besides me." And he said, "Well, it's no joke. So you have to be prepared for this." And she said, "Nevertheless, the teacher is known by the students, and if none of the students are passing the grade, then that reflects badly on the teacher." And Papa said, "What does Ram Dass care for other people's opinions?" So back and forth they went, and so later on, Papa was sitting there with the group. These are all devoted people. And he said, "Anyone who's willing to give themselves 100%, may come up right now, and Ram Dass will give them," that's how he referred to himself in third person, "Ram Dass will give them full realization right now." You know, out of all those devotees, not one of them stepped up. Not one of them stepped up. And Papa said, "All right, offer once again, but you need to come up, but willing to give up everything." And this woman that I was talking to said, "I was there." She says, "I was in school, I wanted to become a teacher. And I was afraid that if I went up, it might take away all of those dreams. So I thought about that, and I didn't go up." Now, Swami Satchitananda wasn't there. And somebody said, "It's too bad Swami Satchitananda wasn't there." And Papa said, "That's all right, he's already jumped in the boat." So nobody came up. And then finally Papa said, "Third time, I'm offering." And then offer is withdrawn. Anybody come forward? Not one person came forward. Can you imagine? Just like that. So later on, Papa and Mataji were talking. And Mataji was such a brilliant wit and so insightful. And Papa said, "Well, Mother, Mother Krishna Bhai. He said, I offered and no one took it. She said, Papa, you can fool others, but you can't fool me. On the outside, you were asking them to come up, but on the inside, you were keeping them from coming up. No, you must give others the realization. So she was still on it. That was her compassion. She wanted others to feel what she felt, to experience this great state of realization that Papa had given to her. And she wanted everybody to have it. That's why the ashram was formed, so that people could come there and devote themselves 1,000% toward realizing God. And you don't have to worry about your food, you don't have to worry about arrangements. Somebody comes in and cleans your room. I mean, everything is done. And rather than treating it like a hotel, and some people do, you come there to get your full and complete realization. You give yourself 1,000%. And when you do that, God answers your prayers. And then you enter in and you sup with Him and He with you. You merge into His being. He merges into your being. Imagine that you have a shell around you. And that shell defines who you are. This is me. This is my body. This is my life. These are my things. This is my role in the world, and so on. All of this I and mine. And that's the trouble. And then just imagine that shell dissolving. That shell of who you are. And you might say, but who will I be? Will I cease to exist? Those are the tests that come to us. And you see that shell dissolving. And as you do, you merge into the ocean of God. God enters and merges into you. The drop and the ocean become one and the same. And you feel the peace, you feel the bliss, you feel the upliftment, the purity. It's all yours. It's all yours. You see, it can be just that simple. Just that simple. But Papa said that when people came to the ashram, that there's a peg on the gate. And when people entered into the ashram, the eagle would jump onto and hang itself on the peg. And people would come into the ashram and they'd be just as good as gold. So sincere, spiritual aspirants. But as soon as they left the ashram, the ego would be waiting on the peg and jump back on the person as they went back out into the world. So we have to be dedicated in our purpose. This is the beginning of a new year, and it's a wonderful time to dedicate yourself anew. To really put yourself into the state of mind where you realize that God does not take away those things that you really want in this world. Rather, He is the fulfillment of your heart's desire. And if it is right for you to be a teacher or anything else, He will fulfill that in you. By giving yourself to Him, it's true, we have to be willing to give up everything that we call our own, because the ego isn't big enough to contain God. It's not big enough. So we have to surrender the ego. We have to transcend the ego. But when you do that, and God wishes to continue to express Himself with you, then He flows back out through His will, and He fulfills His will in your life. Maybe He takes you away and takes you to a completely different place and time. Or perhaps He keeps you right here and you continue on to all outward appearances the same as before, and yet inwardly you are completely changed. So let us dedicate ourselves to this proposition. Let us give ourselves completely to God. He will take this life, and then He will manifest what He wishes, and you will have Him, that complete and full realization. There is nothing better. Please pray with me. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of Thy glorious presence.
Of Thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
And surrender myself to Thee.
And surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My communion with Thee.
Of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Some time out in the desert and hopefully having some time to really dedicate towards putting together some of Mother's books that we've been working on. So it would be wonderful to have that, to have her words put together in books that will be able to inspire new generations as they come along. Such tremendous truth that she had, and particularly around the Christian path and the inner meaning, the words of Jesus and the life of Jesus. So I'm looking forward to that very much. But know that I will be ever with you, your hearts, minds, souls. You know, whenever I think of anyone, I don't feel any separation at all. It gradually came to me. I remember when Swami Satchidananda said, anytime you think of being here at the ashram, you are here. And gradually that became true. I could just think of myself there. And just as Rebecca's letter here, and I could hear the ting, 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 ting of the little hand symbols of the Ram Nam done down at the Mandir. And smell the incense, hear the birds singing, so many beautiful tropical birds that are there. And just the whole feeling of the place comes, and I feel immersed in it. And so whenever I think of any of you, I just feel you absolutely close, that there's no separation of time or distance. And that is the way that it is in spirit, because we are all one in God. And there is no separation. As Lari Maharshi used to say, why do you want to come here and see this bag of bones? Just concentrate here. Katusta Chaitanya. Concentrate there and you will see me. And more than see. One time I was meditating and I felt Lari Maharshi so intensely. And then with my inner vision I saw him materialize, so to speak, in front of me. And I thought, oh, how wonderful. Oh, I really want to bow down to his feet. I was seated on the floor, and I bowed down, and I actually felt his feet, and I opened my eyes, and there he physically was, in the room. Isn't that wonderful? And that's the way that it can be. God can be drawn to you by your intense aspiration and devotion to him. And there need not be any separation of time nor space. None at all.